This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
In 49 other states, football is just a game. But this is Wisconsin.
The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl. The Lombardi Trophy is coming home.
Wisconsin fans demand the best analysis, the best interviews, the best coverage, and no one delivers like the Big Show Radio Network.
Good evening. Just like that, the NFL season is almost finished, and I can't even believe it. I can't even believe the Super Bowl is next week. And believe me, at the beginning of September, we all had questions as to whether or not this season was actually going to happen or be able to finish or be able to be cut back or pushed back or... No, we got through it. There were some hurdles, but we got through it. Unfortunately, your Green Bay Packers are not representatives in the NFC in the Super Bowl this year, and I am still hurt. Good evening. It is The Huddle, served up by Bud Light Seltzer. Unquestionably good. I'm Radio Joe Zanzola. And tonight on the panel, as we... I don't want to relive it, but we are going to relive it. We're going to relive this NFC Championship game and talk about some of the changes that are coming. We're already seeing changes to the coordinator positions, at least one that came out earlier today. We'll talk about Aaron Rodgers. We'll talk about the Super Bowl. All that stuff is coming up and looking ahead to where the Packers stand in this upcoming offseason and the draft. But tonight on the panel, we have one guy that has been on this show many times, and I figured it'd be very fitting to have him on for the finale of The Huddle. But another guy that's on the panel tonight, this is his first time, and he's also followed this Packers team very close now for a number of years. So I will introduce first the guy who's making his debut on The Huddle, served up by Bud Light Seltzer. He is one Ryan Wood, our Green and Gold insider, and also, of course, from the Green Bay Press Gazette and PackersNews.com. What is up, Ryan? How are you?
Hey, Joe. It's good to be talking with you. Yeah, I'm the rookie tonight. It's nice. Long-time listener. Nice to be talking with you here.
Well, I know you're going to settle in nicely here because you're used to this whole radio deal because you've been doing it on all of the shows on The Fan and, of course, on the Big Show Network for the last several months. So we have Ryan Wood, but the other guy that I mentioned, you know him well, our other Green and Gold insider, the one and only Mike Clemens. Good evening, Mike. How are you?
Hi, Joe. Hi, Woody. Hey, overdue, Woody, to have you on this show. It's great to have you aboard.
I appreciate that, Mike. Yeah, it's always good speaking with you as well.
All right, so let's get down to the nitty-gritty here with this Packer game, because I think everyone and their mother thought the Packers were going to win this game. For me, I had them winning, but I was certainly skeptical, and I felt that the Buccaneers were going to put up some kind of fight, and of course, it was more than that. The Buccaneers beat the Packers. Ryan, I'm going to start with you with the opening question, and I want you to fill in the blank. This is what it is. The reason why the Green Bay Packers lost on Sunday was because of what?
Execution. I mean, they just didn't bring it at the end of the day. And at some point, they have to show up to an NFC Championship game ready to play. I mean, 2016, they're down 27-0 in Atlanta at halftime. Last year, they're down big. This year, they're down 28-10 a minute into the second half. At some point, you can't get into 18, 20, 27-point holes in NFC Championship games. It just what the Seattle Seahawks did in 2014, that epic comeback against the Packers, is miraculous. It doesn't happen all the time. So you got to show up. You got to execute the plan. And they didn't do that. They didn't play well enough to win against a team that if they did, they probably would be playing again next week.
All right. Well, this is something that the three of us, we were all in that locker room in San Francisco. And we remember how it all went. Za'Darius Smith talked to the media after that game. And the big thing he said was, we didn't make any adjustments. And it was just like, you're sitting there listening to him. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, how... this is the NFC Championship game. How could this team not be prepared? And Mike, that's something that I thought going into this game that these guys there would have been a little bit more there, maybe a little bit more motivation. I mean, after all, the Packers defensive front outside of Kenny Clark in that game against Tampa, they didn't really do a whole lot, and we didn't really see much of the Smith brothers in that game.
It sounds silly, but sometimes losses. The team learns more about themselves than they do from having 13 wins. I feel sometimes I learn more from those losses, and it exposes mistakes that need to be covered up. And all along the way, you know, around about late December, I started, talking to some of our shows on The Fan in Milwaukee and just saying, I'm telling you, this is going to get back to defense. This is going to get back to coaching experience and coaching calls and game management. This is going to come down to special teams and field position. And there's some weaknesses there that I'm really concerned about. I just felt that watching the Bucs and the Saints game two or three times, I thought, okay, A, Drew Brees, he's half the quarterback he is. His wife came out the week after the game and said, by the way, it was more than a punctured lung. I mean, the guy had 50% of his arm. That's why the deepest pass he completed in that game was 16 yards. So it was half of Drew Brees that was in that game. But it was the three turnovers that gave Tom Brady the short field, and that made the difference there. So I'm thinking, I'm concerned about how physical the Bucs defense can be and how that matchup can be for Green Bay. So the next thing I'm thinking about is just you got to play mistake-free. Now, they only had the one pick. And then Aaron Jones had the fumble coming out of the locker room. And then the coach, he fumbled with the field goal call. So those three things added up to it. And to me, you had to play a darn near perfect game against that physical team. And the Buccaneers made their fair share of mistakes. But man, I'm telling you, from the first series, from the opening series, when they march down and score, it's like, oh man, the Buccaneers are here to play. It's going to be an even match, and Aaron Rodgers, there was something about him again in this where he looked like his eyes were just a little wide open and had a little bit of panic. He made some spectacular throws again, as usual, but there were just other times where I just sensed that he was uncomfortable, and it might have started with not having left tackle David Bakhtiari in there, who, by the way, remember, went down in that Week 6 loss to the Buccaneers in Tampa Bay.
You know, it's funny because we talk about Aaron Rodgers in this game, Ryan, and we all know how incredible of a season he had. But I'll be perfectly honest, like, if you want to point some of the blame, I'll point some of it at Aaron Rodgers. Some of the decision-making he made, to me, I couldn't believe it. Like, he was missing open receivers. He was trying to fit balls into Davante Adams when he was clearly double covered. He missed an opportunity on that third and goal at the end of the game where he had room to run and maybe he gets in the end zone. Some of that blame has to be put on Aaron.
Well, the Packers offense was 2-for-10 in goal to go situations. And at some point when you're the MVP quarterback, your job is to get that offense into the end zone. You've got to find a way to make the play and get it done. You look at Aaron Rodgers' stat line, and it's pretty phenomenal. I mean, even the one interception you could argue was came on a penalty, a defensive pass interference down the field at the end of the half. When I say execution, look, Matt LaFleur is going to get a second guess endlessly for the field goal on fourth and goal, and rightfully so. I get I get the theory, just like Aaron Rodgers said, you get the idea, doesn't make it the right idea, right? But as questionable as that decision was, when I say execution, you know, coaches cannot execute as well. It's not just players that don't execute the game plan. The sideline can also fail to execute the game plan. And when you look at the box score and you see 48 passes for Aaron Rodgers and 16 runs, and I get that in the third quarter, a minute in, they're 18 points down. So you got to throw a little bit to catch up. I understand that. But if you look at that game, especially since they quickly came back, it was a 5-point game in the fourth quarter. They scored two touchdowns in the third quarter to close the gap. They abandoned the run. Matt LaFleur abandoned the run so often in that game, especially down inside the 10. He talked about it after the game, how he fell into the routine of drop back, drop back, drop back, instead of running the ball to set up the action pass game, much the way they did the week earlier against the Rams. And they just were patient with the run game. They stayed with it. They executed the plan. And then they hit Alan Lazard for the 58-yard touchdown, which was the biggest play of that game to get into the NFC Championship game. Aaron Rodgers set a single playoff game Packers record with 33 completions. And that is the absolute last record that this team and that quarterback needed to set, because it's not balance. It was an imbalanced offensive attack. And as questionable, as damaging, really, as the decision to kick a field goal on fourth and goal was, much more damaging was not sticking with the game plan and abandoning the run, because that's what this offense did well all season. It's the zenith of what this offense could be, when the run game came first and then Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams came and followed that. To abandon that in a championship game, it's like Mike said, that the coaching experience, the adjustments, what does the sideline do? It's you can't abandon what got you there when you're on the doorstep of the Super Bowl.
Exactly. And Ryan, here's the other thing. Jamal Williams was the hot hand. I mean, you know, Aaron Jones, after the rib injury, he was done. But, you know, he had a couple of nice plays. But Jamal Williams, man, did you see that kick return he had? The guy was, his hair was on fire. He was there. You could not stop him. What we don't know, and we haven't had an end of season press conference from the head coach yet, and we'll talk about why maybe that hasn't happened yet, is the RPO situation. Did the quarterback check out of the run and go to these passes? Did he look at the defensive front, look at those two linebackers over the middle and say, I'm not going to run this. I'm not going to go the run here. But my gosh, against the alleged, you know, number one ranked defense the week before, in the second quarter, 14 play drive, 8 minutes off the clock, 8 runs, 6 short passes. They took control of the game. If they'd had one of those in the first half of this game against the Buccaneers, different outcome.
He is Mike Clemens, our Green and Gold insider. Also alongside making his debut here on The Huddle is our other Green and Gold insider from the Green Bay Press Gazette and PackersNews.com, Ryan Wood. We will talk more about this game coming up here on the other side. We'll look at some of the other bad parts about this, and coming up here in a little bit as well, we will discuss this whole situation with the coordinators, where the Packers go from there with their coaching staff. That is all coming up. I'm Radio Joe Zanzola. This is The Huddle, served up by Bud Light Seltzer. Unquestionably good. We will have more coming up right after this.
Border to Border, the Big Show Radio Network.
You know, it's a long season. You put so much into it. To get to this point, you know, we had our chances. So, you know, not different position in the last couple of these where we got blown out and didn't really have a chance. You know, they went up 3 scores. We battled back with a couple scores. Defense came up with some big turnovers, and, you know, we had a lot of chances.
Yeah, you know that voice very well. That is Aaron Rodgers talking about things after that game, that miserable defeat. More misery for Packer fans. And again, the stars were aligned. They were aligned. And it started with Aaron Rodgers and the fact that he was having an MVP season, putting it all together. He was more motivated than anyone on that team because he knew what this meant to have a game, an NFC championship at Lambeau Field, and the Packers still found a way to lose. A lot of frustrations. We're talking about it here on The Huddle, served up by Bud Light Seltzer. Unquestionably good. It's our final show of the season. Hard to believe. I'm Radio Joe alongside my guests tonight, Mike Clemens and Ryan Wood. So, Ryan, I will go back to you. I mean, again, there are just so many things to look at in this game. And one other aspect of this that we have not talked about is just the struggles of Kevin King. I mean, Kevin King, he had a really good year last year. And again, this was a critical guy because he was a second-round draft selection. Ted Thompson had passed up on T.J. Watt, so everyone was looking at King hoping that he would start to make progress, and he did. The issue with Kevin King, though, has been the guy hasn't been able to stay healthy, and he's been dealing with a lot of problems. I was just very disappointed by how poorly he played in that game on Sunday.
And it was kind of a culmination of his season as a whole. You know, it's not like it was a one-off. Kevin King last year, like you said, he had a very good year in 2019, his third season. Going into that 2009 season, the medical was the big question that he had to answer. Well, in 2019, Kevin King plays 15 games. And when he's healthy on the field, he in his first three seasons, he'd always played at a high level. He had five interceptions last season, led the defense. He was the playmaker in the Packers secondary. So he really aligned himself for a big payday if he could duplicate what he did in 2019 this past season. And he just didn't. You look at the season as a whole. He only played 11 games. He missed five games with injury. No interceptions. Did not have a single interception. A big decline. So even when he was healthy, he wasn't having the same type of production. And then for that to be the last film that you put on the field before going into free agency to get toasted on the first drive, to miss time of Tom Brady passing the end zone against Mike Evans. I don't know. It'd be great to talk with Kevin King. I don't know what he saw on the play, but it looked like he jumped a half second early, which is really, really early. Not to mention at the end of the half, when you can say all you want about Mike Pettine's call and what the Packers are doing in one high in that situation. I have no idea. I'll never understand why they weren't in two shell and they had two deep safeties, but they weren't. And as a cornerback, you have to have awareness. You have to know what the situation is. And there was zero awareness on Kevin King's part against Scotty Miller, letting him run deep. And then the defensive pass interference, which of the three to me was, I still think it's a questionable call, especially in the context of how that game was called. I don't think the ball was catchable. I didn't think live, and I still don't think it's on replay. I don't think it was a catchable pass. So defensive pass interference of the three, that's where maybe you give Kevin King a bit of a pass, but you don't give him a pass because of the two touchdowns he gave up in the first half that led to that 28-10 hole, and a huge difference being 14-10, 17-10, and 21-10 at halftime. For that to be his final sample size of film, it wasn't the 2020 that he wanted, and Kevin King lost a lot of money this past season.
And sticking with Kevin King, Mike, I mean, that one particular play right before halftime where Scotty Miller just totally blows him up. I mean, yeah, I will definitely point the finger at Kevin King that he didn't look prepared there. But also, I'll blame Mike Pettine because they should have been playing prevent defense there. Like, there's no reason why Kevin King should be all by himself on an island with Scotty Miller.
Ryan, did you say that it looks like Scott Miller jumped a little on that pass? He got a little head start.
I didn't see that, but is that what you saw?
I'm sorry. I thought you. No. I thought you said that about that play. I misunderstood what you were just saying there. Joe, regardless what Pettine had called to, if it was Chris Barnes who was out there in the radio helmet, at this point of your career, you're supposed to know the situation as a player. And you've got that bunch formation that's on your side there, the right side of the defense, the left side of Tom Brady. You got Bruce Arians, who's looking at how the defense is setting up and changing his mind on going for a field goal and putting that out there. And Bruce Arians said after the game, as soon as he sent Brady back out there and saw where Kevin King was, he was already licking his chops. Scotty Miller is a kid that was undrafted off the radar from Jason Licht, this, you know, GM you're going to hear about a lot next year and how he, or next week on how he built this team, found him at Bowling Green, clocked him at 4-3. If these guys had done their homework, they've got to know that this guy is as fast as Chris Godwin. You can't ignore this guy. And instead, he did. He did not play him deep. He did not protect the end zone. He should have just done that naturally, regardless of what the call was. That was his guy, the first guy coming out of there. He's the right corner in that situation. A football player is supposed to make that adjustment and not let the guy get behind him. And Kevin is a great kid. I really enjoy, you know, talking to him. He is fearless. He tries to make some big hits and stop runs. Brian Gutekunst is the guy who scouted him when he's out in Carolina. And before he was in Carolina, he was with Washington. But I remember him coming down to the draft room and talking about this guy. They loved his long arms, the longest reach. He puts his head down and hits guys. And he's been 50-50 in his coverage. This year, had the quad injury. Then on a Friday, had an Achilles. Then this past week, a back injury that popped up, so he missed Friday's practice. I got to believe that the Buccaneers saw that and went after it. Now, here's the other thing that's interesting. Let's say after the Mike Evans touchdown, when he floats it over his head, and maybe of other couple of other plays, you say, you know what? Kevin ain't got it today with the back. Who do you replace him with? Because on my depth chart that they printed out on Wednesday before the game, it's Josh Jackson, who was inactive again. He's been inactive for the last month, a healthy inactive. You got Tremont Williams down on the sideline who you signed. He didn't have a snap in that game. Kadar Holman, he was inactive as well. So it would have been interesting to see if they said, you know what, sit down, Kevin. Who are you going to move to that corner? I'm not sure who they're going to put in that situation. But it's something that they should have considered as they watched him in the first quarter. That's just my take.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll just stick with Kevin King here. I'll go back to you, Ryan. I mean, were you surprised that they didn't use Tremont Williams at all, or was that signing more so just a way of having him ready for the Super Bowl just so he could get comfortable?
Nowhere near as surprised as this. And the answer Mike's question, what surprised me was that at no point did they just say, okay, forget this. We're going to match Jaire Alexander on Mike Evans, which is what they did in that Week 6 game for the most part when Kevin King was unavailable. They matched Jaire Alexander on Mike Evans, and Mike Evans had one catch for 10 yards. So I kept waiting for that adjustment, and it never happened. And the overall picture for this Packers going into the offseason now is they're not back at square one because they have a second-team All-Pro in Jaire Alexander. But behind Jaire Alexander, they're back to square one at corner now. Because 20 and 39, Kevin King and Chandon Sullivan were picked on the entire game. To me, Mike, you mentioned earlier kind of the, oh boy, here they go moment of that first drive. I go back to that first third down when Mike Evans dusted off Chandon Sullivan and Tom Brady floated it over his head in a picturesque Tom Brady pass, especially in that type of third down situation.
Nice
over
touch pass.
And over and over again, he's picking on those two guys. They're back. Cornerback's the biggest draft need that they have going into this offseason again. And it seems like they've just been here the past decade. They just can't get out of that rut and get that position right.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what the Packers are going to do with corner because, again, if Kevin King isn't the answer, who is? Josh Jackson, to me, is a bust, flat out. Like, if this guy couldn't get in when he was totally healthy – you know that they've moved on from him, and that's sad. And that's just, again, another DB that the Packers have, not been able to hit on. I mean, it's great to hit on Jaire Alexander. I mean, we know that he's a shutdown corner, and we know that you're just not going to hit on those guys every single day and every single draft. So that's good, but it's just trying to find someone next to him that's going to make a big difference. That's Ryan Wood of the Green Bay Press Gazette, PackersNews.com, also alongside Mike Clemens, our Green and Gold insider. We will talk more about the locker room, the emotions after that game, because everyone was certainly taking it hard. We'll also hear from Aaron Rodgers a little bit later on in the show and discuss those controversial comments he made after the game on Sunday night. So we are loaded here on the huddle, served up by Bud Light Seltzer, unquestionably good. I'm Radio Joe, and we'll have more coming up right after this.
16 stations strong, the Big Show Radio Network.
I think it stings just because of the way it happened, and it was kind of a repeat, digging a hole at the beginning of the game. And, at least this one, we kind of clawed back into it. And, obviously the what happened at the end of the game happened. I mean, yeah, you can't take the call back, but it is what it is, man. It sucks. It sucks losing in the NFC Championship 3 or 4 times, whatever it was. And yeah, I mean, that's why it sucks.
Yep. Sucks for them. Sucks for the fans. This is Lucas Patrick, another Packer. As you just heard Corey Linsley there talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't really too much of a message after the game. And when you lose like this, and these ones sting pretty bad. I can't say Aaron enough for what he's done for my career. And definitely wanted to go out there and win it for him. Couldn't get it done, and just got to reload and come back next year. And hopefully do it for him. But that man's a good leader. He's a good person. Definitely wanted to win it for him.
So Lucas Patrick there, very emotional, literally crying there after the game. Again, you heard Corey Linsley, just a lot of emotions in that Packers locker room, and rightly so, because there was a lot of excitement, a lot of optimism, and it just seemed like, I said it earlier in the show, I'll say it again, the stars seemed to align for this year's Green Bay Packers team, that this Packers team, the 13-3 Packer team of 2020, was certainly better than last year's 13-3 Packer team. It is the Huddle, served up by Bud Light Seltzer, Unquestionably Good. I'm Radio Joe alongside Mike Clemens and Ryan Wood. So, Mike, again, you heard from some of those guys after the game of how hard they were taking it. Earlier this week, we had Jordy Nelson on the show, and he talked about those emotions, and I know that was something that really stood out to you in that interview from Jordy.
Yeah. Ryan, do you remember Rob Davis, the long snapper who became the director of player development?
I do.
Yeah. He told this great story to Jordy. Rob Davis was the long snapper for the Green Bay Packers 14, 15 years. And I think it was with Sherman McCarthy, he transitioned from player to director of player development. And this is a guy that, if you're a rookie and you arrived to Green Bay, okay, kid, here's some places we recommend where you can live. Here's where you can get some, transportation. Here's where you should set up your banking. Here's how you handle your checks. They take these guys all the way through. And so Jordy Nelson was on with us on the Big Show Network. He told this great story about, I didn't know that Rob would have to do things even to down to details like getting your car back home so you could fly home instead of driving across the country after the season was over. But listen to Jordy talk about, think about this now. You're looking at having to go through off-season workouts again and the OTAs and the mini camps and now an extended regular season, the risk to your body to try and get healthy, to try and get back to just the postseason and maybe a Super Bowl. And the fact that how can Tom Brady do this year after year after year? This was Jordy the other day talking about that emotional losing in the locker room.
There is so much emotion after that last game, not only probably with Aaron, but everyone in that locker room. If you look back, if I can think back to the NFC, and not even just the NFC Championship games that we were in, but any playoff run we were in, there wasn't one year that we got in the playoffs thinking, all right, well, let's hopefully win this one. If not, then, it wasn't meant to be. Like, we always thought that we were going to make a run all the way to the Super Bowl. And someone told me in the facility one time, he said he truly, it was actually Rob Davis when he was our player development guy. He's like, you guys truly believe this year, because he can always tell the mindset of the team based off of if they're already booking their, shipping their cars out with Rob. Because they'd go to him, he'd have like the connection or who to contact and how to set it up to, ship your cars to Florida or California or whatever for the offseason. He said sometimes you can tell the team's not truly thinking they're going to make a run, because they'll start making those plans, week 16, 17, or the first round of the playoffs. There's a couple years he's like, yeah, you guys truly believed it, because no one was making those plans yet. So I'm sure that's the way it was with this team. They were playing extremely well, thinking that they could make a run all the way through, and it is that abrupt end. And I was talking about it with my wife this week, and it's the abrupt into a season is never fun, and then you start thinking about what all you have to get through, what all you have to do to get back to an opportunity to do it again, to be one game away, and then you start thinking, all right, now I gotta go through off season hopefully I don't do something to hurt myself there. Now I gotta go through OTAs, training camp, preseason game, and then get through 16, now possibly 17 regular season games to get back to an opportunity to have a chance to do this again. I think that's where it hurts the most, and where I think I started to appreciate the Super Bowl we won more and more after every playoff run we didn't make it back to another one, and understand how hard it is. I try to explain to people, obviously Tom is an extreme outlier. We know, I mean, he's played 21 seasons, but you got to think one season he didn't play because of his ACL he tore in the first week. So he's made it to the Super Bowl 10 out of 20 years of actually playing a full season. He has a 50%. That's insane, and people like look at that and think that's the norm, and it's definitely not. So him and the Patriots have kind of messed with everyone's minds on how easy it is to get back. But it's extremely difficult to be one of the last two and then the last one standing. So I think that's where a lot of the emotion comes from, and as you become an older guy, you know, I don't want to say his time's running out, but eventually you're not going to be playing anymore. And every year that goes by where you don't get back or don't win another one, you know, it just gets harder and harder.
Some great stuff there from Jordy Nelson, and you can hear that full conversation at BigShowNetwork.com. That's BigShowNetwork.com. We had Jordy on earlier this week with Sparky, Gary, and Leroy. So, Ryan, I'll get your reaction from what Jordy said there, and also this goes along with really my next question, because we really don't know when the window is just going to close completely on the Green Bay Packers. I mean, again, we're talking about an offseason with a lot of uncertainty of who the Packers are going to be able to bring back, how much money they're really going to be able to spend. And you also have to look at Aaron Rodgers and say, you know, can he replicate another MVP season like he just had? I mean, again, these opportunities don't come every single year. I look at it and think, hey, you know what? The Packers season, this was their best chance. How do you feel about it looking ahead?
Well, the window's open as long as Aaron Rodgers is playing at an MVP level, because that's just the nature of this game, the nature of this league. If you have an MVP caliber quarterback, you are a title contender. And Aaron Rodgers, I don't think it's a surprise to anyone here. He's going to be back next year. Mark Murphy's made it very, very clear. Now, there's some things that are going to have to be worked out, likely in the contract and the structuring, the guaranteed money. But Aaron Rodgers is going to be the Packers quarterback in 2021, which will mean, by definition, that the title window is still going to be open. And yet, it's hard for me to think that in Aaron Rodgers' mind Sunday night, there wasn't at least a kernel of, that might have been my last best chance, right? And I think there's a psychological blow here. And I've said it ever since immediately after the game, because in 2014 in Seattle, in 2016 in Atlanta, and last year in San Francisco, all three of those losses, they could always go back to, yeah, but get this game in Lambeau Field. It's been 13 years. Aaron Rodgers had never had one. He started talking about wanting one after that 2016 blowout in the Georgia Dome against Atlanta. That's when he really ramped up. They want the one seat. They want the one seat. It's been 5 years that he's talked about that regularly, and they finally get that opportunity with a team that is good enough to do it. If you paid attention to the whole sample size of the season, the Packers were the best team in the NFC from start to finish. Aaron Rodgers knew that. And you get that game at Lambeau Field and you don't finish. And then on top of that, you know what the salary cap situation is, not just with the Aaron Joneses and the Corey Linsleys, but with the difficult, likely cap casualties that are going to have to be made to get under the $175 million cap next year. It's just hard to see this team having the same roster around Aaron Rodgers that they had this year, and they had the game at home. So it's just the whole culmination of all that. It's hard for me to think that while the title window's going to be open, so long as he's an MVP caliber quarterback, that might have been their last best chance. They might not get another chance. Not that they can't do it, but another chance as good as this one that just went by the wayside.
Joe, this hit him like a truck. You know, first of all, Mercedes Lewis has become his best friend after the last two or three years. Wanted a win-win for that veteran, 36, 37-year-old tight end. You start looking at these weapons. Aaron Jones, he's out the door. Jamal Williams, out the door. Your center, Corey Linsley. Injury-wise, you did okay. I mean, Bakhtiari was a real punch to the gut, that left tackle. Lane Taylor at right guard. But you got through the season, and you think you got enough maybe to get you back in there next year and whenever Bakhtiari can get back on the field. and then one or two injuries on the defensive side. But you just went through 17 weeks, and your team did one of the best in the NFL at getting between the icebergs of this COVID pandemic.
Right.
You know, you survived that as well. And you get this thing at home, and are you kidding me? We're losing to a bunch of these. We're losing to JJP. This guy should have been out of the league 3 or 4 years ago. And he's over there. He's on top of me. You know, 5 sacks. That's going to be the head scratcher driving him nuts.
Well, before we go to break, this was Aaron Rodgers. Because, again, we talk about Aaron. As he gets older, the locker room gets younger. Well, there were still a lot of guys that he was able to develop new relationships with. We always talk about Mercedes Lewis as one guy that he got really close to after he came to Green Bay a couple of years ago. This was Aaron Rodgers. Take a listen to this.
I just found some really special friendships with Mercedes and Devontae, especially Tim and I have become really close over the years. Jamal, I love Jamal. Aaron Jones. A lot of guys' futures that are, you know, uncertain, you know, myself included. That's what's sad about it most. Getting this far, obviously there's going to be an end to it at some point, whether we make it past this one or not. But just the uncertainty is tough, and the finality of it all. There's a lot of unknowns going into this offseason now. I'm going to have to take some time away for sure and clear my head and just kind of see what's going on with everything. But it's pretty tough right now, especially thinking about the guys that may or may not be here next year. There's always change. That's the only constant in this business. It's really tough to get to this point. Really, really tough, especially with it only being one bye week in the playoffs. It's a grind just to get to this point, and that makes the finality of it all kind of hit you like a ton of bricks. That's why it's a gutting feeling in your stomach. But I do appreciate you all and the job that you've done this year. I appreciate our interactions. Appreciate the opportunity to share every week. I'll always be thankful for this season. Thank you.
Well, coming up after the top of the hour, we will hear more from Aaron Rodgers as he had made the comment about his future being uncertain and then had to go on Pat McAfee's show and hash it all out and try to provide some clarity, I guess, and maybe a little closure to what he was trying to say. So we'll talk about that coming up on the other side. Also, did this game top 2014 when it came to the misery? We'll find out coming up next here with Mike Clemens and Ryan Wood. I'm Radio Joe Zanzola. This is The Huddle, served up by Bud Light Seltzer. Unquestionably good. We will have more coming up next here on the Big Show Radio Network.
Wisconsin-wide, the Big Show Radio Network.
We was doing a good job pressuring him in the second half, you know, start running some more games and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, guys getting up in his face, you know, creating turnovers and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, second half, we were getting a lot of good pressure on him. Just feel like we just started slow, you know, as a defense. Just wasn't good situationally at times. And, you know, they made us pay with it.
Yeah, that's Kenny Clark. He was really the only guy that was good on that defensive line for the Packers this past week. Beyond that, no one else really stepped up, and they lost in the trenches. And that's not what you wanted from a group that had really turned their games up to the next level the last couple of months. Welcome back. It is The Huddle. We are served up by Bud Light Seltzer, unquestionably good. I'm Radio Joe, alongside my guests tonight for our final huddle. Mike Clemens, our Green and Gold Insider, and also another Green and Gold Insider, who we've had on throughout the season, Ryan Wood of the Green Bay Press Gazette and PackersNews.com. So we only have a couple of minutes here, guys. And Ryan, I'll start with you. But when we look at this Packer game and all the different problems that there were in it, does it outdo all the misery that happened in that 2014 NFC Championship game against the Seattle Seahawks?
It's very different. It's very different. No, because they weren't 2 minutes away from the Super Bowl and only needing to convert the most basic, simple, expected play in the game to get there, right? So they weren't that close. But I just go back to that psychological damage. In Seattle, they could say, yeah, but this was in CenturyLink Field, the 12th man. Get it in Lambeau Field, it's different. That has been riding over this franchise for years. For years now, and they finally got it, and it's still the same result. It's a big blow. There's no question. It's a bigger blow than last year. It's a big blow. It's a bigger blow than Atlanta. It's not a bigger blow than Seattle, but it's a very different. It's a big blow in a very different way, I think.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's interesting because the Packers in this game against Tampa Bay were trying to make a comeback. To me, I look at it and go, Jaire Alexander gave you a couple of gifts. I mean, you were able to force enough turnovers in this game to really make a difference. Tom Brady is throwing it up, and Jaire's picking him off, and the offense couldn't score on two of Jaire's interceptions. Like, Mike, I know it's not like Seattle in that regard where the Packers were in control, but again, a comedy of errors, and if you just make a couple of adjustments, this Packers team is probably going to Tampa Bay.
Pete Carroll outcoaches Mike McCarthy when he goes for the fake field goal to flip that 16-point difference to change the momentum of the game, to take control of it. And, you know, Russell Wilson, didn't he have three picks in the first half? But the Legion of Boom was a defense of destiny. That was a tremendous defense. And people, I wasn't so disappointed in that Packer loss because not only were you in Seattle, and I thought you were probably playing the better team, but Aaron Rodgers is out there on one leg. Everybody forgets about the calf injury. He was stationary in that game. And so, to me, it wasn't as great of a loss, but people were pointing out, what a great roster. When are you going to have a roster like that again? And I take that. This, to me, was a bigger loss because you had it at home and all of the weapons you had and how smooth you'd gone through a 13-3 season. To me, this was a bigger disappointment.
I still cannot believe we are talking about this right now. Like, I really, really thought the Packers were going to get it right this time around. Well, we shall see. We still have another hour of the huddle served up by Bud Light Seltzer. Unquestionably good. That's Mike Clemens. Also alongside is Ryan Wood. Joining me on the panel, I'm Radio Joe. Sam Schmitz, our producer on the other side of the glass. Coming up, we will talk more about number 12, Aaron Rodgers. What he said, his future, and is everything okay here? I mean, Ryan alluded to it earlier. Like, Rodgers isn't going to go anywhere, right? No, he shouldn't. We'll talk about that more coming up on the other side here on the Big Show Radio Network.
You're listening to the Big Show Radio Network. In 49 other states, football is just a game, but this is Wisconsin.
The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl. The Lombardi Trophy is coming home.
Wisconsin fans demand the best. The best analysis. The best interviews. The best coverage. And no one delivers like the Big Show Radio Network.
A lot of guys' futures that are, you know, uncertain, you know, myself included. That's what's sad about it most. Getting this far, obviously there's going to be an end to it at some point, whether we make it past this one or not. But just the uncertainty is tough and the finality of it all.
And that was the soundbite that was heard around Packer Nation across the entire world. Aaron Rodgers talking about his future immediately after the game. And right away, if you looked at social media, you were probably going to have a meltdown because everyone had a say in it. A lot of people were freaking out. Why is he saying this? Why is he talking about it now? Was this methodical? What did he know what he was saying? Yeah, let's figure this all out as the huddle served up by Bud Light Seltzer continues here on the Big Show Radio Network. I'm Radio Joe Zanzola alongside my guests. And again, this is our final huddle of the season. I cannot believe it. Green and Gold Insider Mike Clemens and also our Green and Gold Insider from the Green Bay Press Gazette and PackersNews.com, Ryan Wood. So you heard what Rodgers had to say there. Let's go through the timeline. So Rodgers says this. And he speaks before Matt LaFleur. That's kind of how the press conferences are set up right now post-game. Usually in the past, the head coach would talk, then the quarterback. But in the COVID world that they're in and how things are situated. The quarterback has been going first and then the head coach. So right away, the media, and rightly so, asked Matt LaFleur about what Rodgers had just said, talking about his future.
I sure as hell hope so. I mean, guys, the MVP of this league. He is the heart and soul of our football team. So, hell yeah, he better be back here. He's our leader.
I mean, talk about putting your head coach on the spot. I mean, yeah, like, why? Aaron Rodgers should be coming back. So then it intensified because now all of a sudden, that's it. Rodgers isn't elaborating on this. So then Mark Murphy, who was on WNFL up in Green Bay with Mark Daniels, Mark asked Mark that very thing about Rodgers' future.
I'll say this. There's no way in heck that Aaron is not going to be on the Packers. I mean, he's going to be the MVP of the league. Might have had his best year ever. He's our unquestioned leader, and, you know, we're not idiots.
Mm-hmm. They aren't. Like, Aaron Rodgers should not be leaving Green Bay next year. He should be the quarterback. He just had an MVP season. This is all crazy talk. Ryan, I'm going to start with you because I'm going to play a very key cut from his interview with Pat McAfee. But didn't you think that when Aaron Rodgers said that, he had to come back and talk to all of his fans? He had to go on Pat McAfee's show to clarify, because had he not, I think everyone had a right to speculate about his future. Did you feel that he needed to go on McAfee to clarify everything after that press conference?
If he wanted to. It was solely up to Aaron Rodgers. If he wanted to stem the speculation, and I know that he said that he doesn't give a poop about speculation, but if he wanted to stem that speculation, then he did need to go on. If he didn't, then he didn't need to. I think you saw whether or not he actually did care about the speculation in the fact that he did. You know, Joe, here's what it was. It was consistent with what he's been saying all year, going back to immediately after the draft. And Mike, I know you've heard the same as me. And for me, that's why I guess I was in the vast minority. But that's why it didn't register as a massive shock when he said that soundbite, because it's the same thing that he said immediately after the draft. His future is uncertain. It's the same thing that he said in the moments after clinching the one seed in Chicago when he was asked if anything that he did in this MVP caliber season of his, in the season that the Packers had quelled in his own mind the doubts and uncertainty that he'd already addressed in the spring. And he said, no, it hadn't. Before the NFC Championship game itself, he said that his future is a beautiful mystery. And so it was consistent with what he's felt, what he's believed the entire past several months. And that hasn't changed. Why hasn't that changed? Because Jordan Love is still a quarterback on this roster. Nothing that has happened has eliminated that fact. And Aaron Rodgers knows that as long as Jordan Love is the quarterback here, even if he's a third stringer, you don't draft a quarterback in the first round. You don't trade up in the first round to have him sit forever. And so to me, it wasn't a surprise. Are there things that he wants to help solidify that uncertain future? Sure. We talked about it. The proration, the guaranteed money that is non-existent now for the remaining life of his contract that goes through 2023. But at the end of the day, what I never heard was Aaron Rodgers is not going to be the quarterback next year, because the only way that doesn't happen is if he retires, and he means it. Like, he's this guy who's talked about legacy, talked about playing into his 40s his entire career, says, nope, at 37 – he's walking away from the game, and he means it unless he gets a trade. That was never a likely scenario. And if that doesn't happen, the Packers are absolutely not moving on from Aaron Rodgers in 2021. They're probably not doing it in 2022, especially if he has the season that he just had. So, it was consistent. I do think it was a bit dramatic, the reaction. At the end of the day, he's going to be the quarterback in 2021, just like Matt LaFleur, just like Mark Murphy said.
You made a great point there at the end about the whole retirement thing, because that certainly doesn't fit into what Rodgers has said and done over the last few years. I mean, just keep in mind, a few years ago, he went out of his way to say, yeah, I changed my diet. I want to make sure that I am playing into my 40s because diet is a big thing. I had to cut out some things that I really didn't want to cut out, but I did it. I lost some weight and I've gone forward. He talked about not too long ago about how squatting, he's been doing more squatting, you know, doing more work to his lower body. So like the whole notion of retirement, that just, you're absolutely right. That doesn't fit. This is what Aaron Rodgers said on the Pat McAfee show, kind of clearing everything up. Take a listen.
I don't think people are used to hearing the truth from athletes. So when they hear the truth, it's so like surprising at times. That's why this show, I think, has been so different than it's because you're hearing somebody who, you know, has been around a long time, who talks to people that he likes and shares like real non-pre-rehearsed, non-robotic comments. That's all I said after the game. You know, it was like I'm 15 minutes from crying in the locker room with, you know, some of my teammates. I come and sit down and do this interview, and they ask me questions. I give real answers, just like I do on this show. And to me, a reality, not a certainty or an absolute, is that my future is not in my hands. Now, that's really the case for all of us, I think, as players. But you can't, I think, naturally, there's times where you let your mind go to maybe, well, I'm going to be a Packer for life, or I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be like a Tim Duncan or a Jeter or a Kobe and play with one team my entire career. I think naturally you dream about that. I mean, that's kind of like a dream scenario. And I've talked about that for much of my career. I think, you know, when they drafted Jordan, it was more just like the reality kicking in going, hey, that's actually never the case. There are no absolutes in this business. And I think it's a beautiful thing to sit with and to wrap your head around. And I did. And I got to a beautiful place about it. Doesn't mean that that's not still a reality. I think that's the only reality, is that there is no absolutes in this business. I just reiterated that after the game, and I get it. Some people are like, well, you just threw 48 touchdowns and probably going to win MVP. Yeah, I understand that. But again, there's no absolutes in this business. So I gave a real answer in the moment. And then people obviously... It's a slow week, so
talked about. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show. So, Mike, I'll turn it to you now. I mean, first of all, do you think Aaron Rodgers nipped it in the bud in that interview with McAfee? And do you really have any questions about A-Rod going into this offseason and really his future?
I hope he did for the media and for the fans. I didn't need it. I've covered this guy since he's a 21-year-old kid that came to Green Bay. I went to Chico and met all of his coaches. I went to Butte College and met his coaches there, his friends. I've even been to the Burger Hut where he hung out with his buddies, okay? Because he helped me. He took me by the hand to do that 6 or 7 years ago. Yeah. And the more this guy grows as a human being, the tougher it is to keep up with him. I challenge anyone listening to this show. Does anybody that you know in your life, that you've worked with, you've ever met, have you ever met anybody that has sat down with the Dalai Lama, won on Jeopardy beating a shuttle astronaut, and gone into a cage fighting off sharks on the side of a boat? That's the level that this guy is playing at, yeah, in life. And so he Jordan Love is the next challenge. And so what's his reaction? Okay, I'm going to look in the mirror and try and figure out how I can improve myself. And you made mention about what he said. He tipped us off. I started looking at my 2010 tape, 2011 tape. What the heck was I doing there? And he realizes he had these leg injuries, and he's probably not been doing the squats as much because he had a knee injury a couple of years ago against the Bears. He's got an ACL that's bothered him since he played on a torn ACL for 2 or 3 years in high school, and they discovered it when he got to Cal. So he changes that about doing these squats and building up his legs and working with his positioning when he releases the ball, and voila, he's just got more strength. He has always said it's not about the arm, it's about the legs. The Tony Romo, why did he have back problems? Because he couldn't avoid the sack. He took those hits. It wasn't his arm, it was the legs. So he brought back the legs at 37, and had this great year at adding to the accuracy. This guy thinks about all this stuff on a higher level. He's constantly playing kind of a mental chess, which is not to say he's necessarily premeditated. It's just he's just works on a higher level of life and spirituality and beautiful mysteries, all this stuff that he reads. And so, it you know, you're trying to get it back down just to football. And I just look at it from the standpoint of this guy is a competitor trying to win football games, trying to win a Lombardi Trophy for Green Bay. And he crapped out again, and it's got to be as frustrating as possible. And there's just a certain amount of things that he can control when it comes to the roster and his destiny and all those kinds of things. And so that's where that frustration comes from. And as I said earlier, too, you know, he's with this class of guys. He would have loved to have won a Super Bowl with this group of guys, because for them, they don't have reunion for NFC championship losers. They have reunions for Super Bowl winners. Yep. And you're going to see Mercedes Lewis and Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams and Devontae Adams and Kenny Clark. You're going to see those guys' reunions for the rest of the year if you win. That's all out the window, and that's why it's so emotional, and that's why he's reeling from this and saying, I have got to start from scratch all over again. How did this happen? He's pounding on the table and saying, how did this happen? And now he's got to spend the next couple of months to figure that out.
He's Mike Clemens, our Green and Gold insider. Also alongside is Ryan Wood from the Green Bay Press Gazette, PackersNews.com. Our other Green and Gold insider who's done fine work this season for us here on the Big Show Network and also 1250 AM The Fan, our flagship station. It's The Huddle, served up by Bud Light Seltzer, unquestionably good. Let's look ahead to the offseason, and we will start with the coordinators. We saw that one change was reported today. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Mike Pettine's future and whether or not Nathaniel Hackett gets picked up somewhere else. That is all coming up next. I'm Radio Joe. We'll have more right after this.
Border to Border, the Big Show Radio Network.
There's just been this string of, you know, long returns, missed PATs. How do you reverse that?
I don't want anything bad to happen. I mean, it's just like if you write a bad story, I mean, you're going to learn from it and move on and stuff. We've corrected that on film. You know, we went through it. We tried to emphasize it. And it's been, a different thing every time and stuff. So, you know, I can't predict what the future is. If it was, you know, I'd be a gazillionaire right now and I'd be coaching for fun.
That's Sean Mananga. Unbelievable. Jeez Louise. Well, see, this guy doesn't have a job anymore. The Packers fired him because special teams never got better. And he did say mistake after mistake. Well, I mean, there are greater issues here, dude. Unbelievable. It's The Huddle, served up by Bud Light Seltzer. Unquestionably good. I'm Radio Joe, alongside my guests tonight for the final huddle of the season, Mike Clemens, Ryan Wood. Mike, I was looking at it and I thought if there's any coordinator they are going to part ways with, it's not Mike Pettine, it's Sean Mananga. Like, I don't, and that's the thing. It's like the history of special teams coordinators for the Packers the last few years, you know, whether it's Sean Slocum or it's Ron Zook, it's just none of these guys are able to get it right. And Mananga, I don't understand why this could never be a better unit.
Sean wasn't LaFleur's first choice for this position. The guy he wanted went to New Orleans for bigger money. And let me ask you this, Ryan, because you know, I stand out there during camp and I'm watching these periods where they work on special teams, and I always feel for these special team coordinators because, to me, you could spend a whole 2 hours out there just trying to get teams down and test guys and you know, toughen them up. And you know, there were some guys that emerged. I watched special teams more this year because I thought if they were going to get to a Super Bowl or deep into the playoffs, they were going to have to really work on field position to help every little thing that they could. And, you know, there's kids like Henry Black, this undrafted safety. He ended up being a gunner, doing pretty good, number 41. And one guy in the press box, this guy made a couple of plays, making tackles, downing footballs, number 34, and they're looking at the draft, at the depth chart, but in front of them, it's like, who's 34? It's not even on my roster. I go, That's this Kavari Russell kid that they've been bringing up from the practice squad, and he's hustling, in practice. So they're making it up as they go. We asked LaFleur several times in December, like, aren't you going to get some more help for this guy? Are you going to put some starters in some of those positions? I mean, you're going to see Jair as a gunner. Don't you feel for the special teams coordinator, Ryan, when you see the challenges he's got?
Well, I do think that there's a personnel element of this as well. I mean, the reality is, under Ted Thompson especially, but even under Brian Gutekunst to a degree, when you fill the bottom of your roster with undrafted guys, what do those guys do? Those guys play special teams. And so when you look at their personnel, I don't know, when's the last time they had a dynamic return guy? Right? Micah Hyde, he's pretty good. It's been years. Where's the personnel on a special teams level to be able to have a dynamic special teams? They don't have that. Now, with that said, that's not to excuse what this special teams has been the past 2 years. And the one thing that Sean Menenga did do was he cleaned up the penalties that were a major issue under Ron Zook. Read the roll call, Mike. 31st in kickoff return, 30th in punt return, 30th in net punting, tied 25th in touchback percentage, exactly 50%, which, why does that matter? Have you seen their kickoff coverage? Mm-hmm. 29th in Rick Gosselin's rankings. They allowed 2 punt return for touchdowns. And Mason Crosby missed a career-high 4 extra points, which is not on Mason Crosby entirely because that's on the operation. So while he did clean up the penalties, they're last in the league or second to last, third to last in the league everywhere. So even without the personnel, at some point you've got to coach it up better than that.
Woody, I want to play a clip for you, and you were there for this. it's important to know the rules. If you're you and I, it helps to know the rules. If you're Chris Collinsworth and you're doing, the play-by-play or the color, the analysis of Sunday Night Football, it helps to know the rules. If you're Gene Serator, great former NFL ref, now in the booth helping out with these broadcasts, it helps. How about if you're the special teams coordinator? Because this is a topic that people have been talking about these onside kicks you're going to see late in a game, and maybe the season is at stake. And, maybe as a method, if you're looking between the lines of the rules, if you got 1 foot out of bounds, if you put your hand on the football, can you stop the play right there, not have to worry about recovering it, just sort of downing the ball there? And so this is not a gotcha question, but these guys get paid $400,000 a year. And so our buddy Pete Doherty asked Sean Menenga this question.
On an onside kick, if a guy's foot is out of bounds and he touches the ball, is the ball still live, and does it matter whether he's on the kicking team or the receiving team?
I don't want to answer that wrong. I'd have to go back and look at the rules myself. As far as you're putting me on the spot right here, right off the top of my head, I'd have to go back and look at it myself and reread the rules. So I don't want to answer you wrong right there.
That's a bad look. That's a bad look. That's really a bad look.
Look, I don't know every special teams rule. I don't know the answer to that question. I'm also not a special teams coordinator.
If you're a little floor and you're up in the office and you're sort of monitoring these things and you look at it and you go, what the hell was that? What the hell was that? What do you mean you don't know the rule? They're talking about, kids are talking about this on Twitter. What do you mean you don't know the rule? And if you don't know the rule, how can you coach the players?
Yep. And what is creativity in this league? Creativity in this league is knowing the rules and knowing the blurred lines between the rules and knowing how to, frankly, exploit the rules. Look at what Mike Vrabel has done at times in Tennessee. Look at Bill Belichick. That's creativity in this league. It's real hard to do that if you don't know what the rules are.
Sean stormed out of that presser. He was so embarrassed and so angry at himself, and I don't know if he felt like he'd been set up, but this is something that people have been talking about this season when it comes to that onside thing, and if the ball's in the sidelines. I mean, I got to go look it up? No.
All right, well, this is my next question. Does Maurice Drayton know the rules? Because, I mean, this guy I'm very curious about. Like, According to all reports today,
you have to tell people who that is.
Yeah, Maurice Drayton was also a part of the special teams staff for the Packers, and he is getting promoted, according to Tom Pelissero and multiple other people on Twitter. And Maurice Drayton has cut his teeth. I mean, he's been with the Packers. He was with the Colts.
He actually got hired when McCarthy was there in what turned out to be McCarthy's last year. Yeah, he's been with the Colts working with Vinatieri. He was there when Pat McAfee, as a punter, went to the Pro Bowl. So he's had that experience like 20, 25 years of college. 44 years old, married, couple of kids. And what was interesting, Joe, was that under the LaFleur regime, not only did they bring in Sean Menenga, who had been with the Browns for 6 years when Mike Pettine was the head coach there, but also they had two full assistants there. And so to have three guys working on special teams, you thought, see, now they'll get this up into the top 15th ranked. Well, they ended up finished 29th in special teams. But again, it's like Ryan said too, it comes down to personnel too. Starting with a quality return guy.
Well, how about a punter? Ryan, J.K. Scott was pretty disappointing this year, and you consider what the Packers did. They spent a nice draft pick to get J.K. Scott, and it seemed like J.K. Scott in the early returns when he first started as a Packer, he was making strides. Like, okay, he's a rookie, but you can see his leg, you can see the hang time. Okay, he took a big step back, and then some of his decision making, like when he had the botched snap and then he's trying to give the ball to Mason Crosby and then Mason Crosby gets hurt. I mean, just some of the decision making from him has been questionable too. Where do you stand with J.K. Scott going forward?
Well, that's a great question. When you draft a punter in the fifth round, you cannot miss on the punter. And look, Brian Gutekunst has had some tremendous drafts. I think this year really brought a lot of clarity to how good his early drafts have been. And you're going to miss some. But you can't miss a punter in the fifth round. You can't. When you draft a long snapper in the seventh round, you can't miss a long snapper in the seventh round if you're going to draft a guy. And they're 30th in net punting.
Doesn't that have to do with the coverage, though, too, and consistency with the gunners and getting guys downfield and getting on the ball, right?
It does. But look at that first punt return for a touchdown, the line drive, just completely on a line. There's no coverage that's going to take care of that.
J.K. Scott's got the leg. There's this inconsistency. And then you don't know about the personal. Remember Indianapolis? He didn't make the team plain. He had some sort of family emergency going on. And then he went down game day and punted and did so. And so who knows, after we know about what Mason Crosby went through last summer and Molly or the year before last, let's not make those kinds of judgments. Although the quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, said, we were talking about J.K. because, he's kind of weird. Aaron actually dropped that one time. But at the end of the day, it's like, not only you're the punter and now you're not nailing them. You're not kicking them 55 yards in the NFC Championship on a nice day in January. You're shanking them for 43 when we really need every yard we can get out of you. But on top of that, For that knucklehead play, against the Rams were, bad snap, and the best idea you come up with is to throw a pass to Mason Crosby and almost get your place kicker killed. But, where is your head at? Where's your checklist of, like, if the worst thing possibly happens and I can't get the ball ready for Mason, what is my next thing? I'm going to fall on the ball. You have to have that template built in. You can't just make this up and say, oh, look, Mason's open, I'll flip him the ball. This is the NFL. That's another reason why you've got a new special teams coordinator.
That's Mike. Ahead, Ryan. Go ahead.
Yeah. What is? I go back to this. What is the word Brian Gutekunst used immediately after drafting J.K. Scott a couple years ago? The word, and this is the standard. This is why you draft a punter in the fifth round. This is the standard the Packers GM held this pick to. He said that in his evaluation, J.K. Scott was a rare talent. That is a massive word in the evaluation, in the scouting world, a rare
good recall. Good recall, Woody.
And has anything that you've seen from J.K. Scott in 3 years, has anything been rare? It hasn't been rare. It hasn't been close to rare. So that's the Packers' own standard, right? And it hasn't lined up.
That shovel pass to Mason was rare.
You don't see that out very often.
That's Mike Clemens, Ryan Wood, our Green and Gold Insiders. I'm glad I was able to make this happen, having both of these guys on the huddle tonight. And if we have the huddle again next season, I'm going to make this happen again, having these two on the panel. We are having a lot of fun tonight and talking about the Packers as the season is over. On the other side, we'll look at some of the other coordinators, promotions, new jobs elsewhere, and some of the other players that are going to be free agents, where they stand, can the Packers bring them back? We will discuss all of that coming up on the other side. I'm Radio Joe. You're listening to The Huddle, served up by Bud Light Seltzer.
16 stations strong, the Big Show Radio Network.
At the time, it felt great. It was just battling back. But at the end of the game, all we could really look at is the wins and losses. And we came out with a loss. And you know, I'm big in looking at myself and my group, how we just had to, you know, start off a little bit faster.
Adrian Amos there. Jaire Alexander had a couple of picks. Secondary, I mean, outside of Kevin King and Shannon Sullivan, some of the other guys in the secondary did step up. But
I thought Adrian Amos had a hell of a year. I thought he played and he became a leader, and he took over that Raven Green position at hybrid safety and became a leading tackler. I think Amos had a tremendous season.
That's Mike Clemens, our Green and Gold Insider. Also on the panel is Ryan Wood of the Green Bay Press Gazette, PackersNews.com. You can check out all of his work there. I'm Radio Joe as the huddle, the final huddle of the season, served up by Bud Light Seltzer, unquestionably good, continues. So, well, let's first talk about Mike Pettine, because right now we still don't know, and I'm just going to pull up my Twitter right now to make sure that there's no breaking news of any kind, because a lot of times it happens. And no, I do
what
not.
What we learned is that his contract has expired. That was news to me this week.
Yeah. So
his contract has expired.
Yeah. So there's no firing here. This is kind of like whether or not Mike Pettine actually wants to come back. It's interesting, Ryan, because you alluded to this when it came down to that situation at the end of the game. Matt LaFleur put faith in Mike Pettine to have his defense make a stop in order for the Packers to get the ball back to try to tie that game again. So when you look at it, Mike Pettine, you would like to think that Matt LaFleur would want Mike Pettine back for next season, right?
You would think. He took the ball out of his MVP's hands and put the season in his defensive coordinator's hands. A defensive coordinator, by the way, that has coordinated a top 10 defense in the league. And if you're a Packers fan, that might upset you, but that's just a fact. They were a top 10 ranked defense in the NFL this season. I've heard a lot of arguments about, well, if you score the touchdown there, get the 2-point conversion, you tie the game, you're not keeping Tom Brady out of field goal range. If you feel that way, fine. But you can't feel that way as a way of saying, no, you go ahead and kick the field goal because you're not keeping Tom Brady out of field goal range anyway, because the reality is that you don't tie the score with the field goal. And then you're counting on this defense that you don't trust to keep out of field goal range to prevent Tom Brady from getting a first down. And that's a heck of a lot. The degree of difficulty, it's not the same. It's not the same. So not only did he put the season in Mike Pettine's hands, but he amplified the degree of difficulty with no guarantee that you're getting the ball back to tie the game. It's like Aaron Rodgers said on Pat McAfee, fourth and goal, if you throw an incompletion, they're getting the ball at the 8. So if you need a stop anyway, you get that stop there. They might be punting from their end zone. You get the ball back at midfield. Yes. That's a lot different.
Against a quarterback been throwing up lollipops.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, and the other thing, too, is Matt LaFleur is going to learn even more as a head coach after his second season. It was interesting because Mike Pettine had this to say recently about kind of being an influence to LaFleur, because, after all, Mike Pettine was there as a head coach, and even though it didn't work out, did he provide any kind of mentorship for LaFleur?
I mean, it's definitely had an impact. I feel like I've been able to help Matt out some as a first time head coach. And I joked about it last year saying I can really help him a lot with the what not to do part of it. But I think you get such a better feel for the whole game. You know, as a head coach, you're spending time on offense and understanding how the other side of the ball, how do they prepare for a defense? How do they break it down? How do they look to attack it? And that information, you know, that has helped me coming back now to be a coordinator, having a much better understanding of just kind of the mechanics of how offensive staffs work and how they view things. Or sometimes on defense, we think they think a certain way, and it couldn't be further from the truth. So it was good for me to be exposed to the other side of the ball. And also it just helps too, from a personnel standpoint, from a roster standpoint, you know, having been in charge of all of it and understanding you only have a limited number of players you can have up on game day, and the importance of special teams and making sure that those, you know, the best special teams guys, if they're your backups, are up, and just taking into account just that you just don't have that, you know, that single view of the world that you obviously can see the bigger picture.
Mike, do you think Mike Benton comes back?
I think so, because I'm unaware of LaFleur's, you know, backup plan for it. I think it's a close call. I think Mike Benton is very good at the analytics. I think he makes a case about his style of defense. You know, he doesn't want to let explosive gains happen in deep passes, except for the one that happened with Scotty Miller. His staff seemed to do a better job of coaching these guys on the edge, not for the pass rush, but to stop the run. I don't know where he is as a motivator or getting guys to play for him. At one point, you had Za'Darius Smith and Kenny Clark and Preston go into him and talk to him and say, you got to simplify this. Your substitutions are too many. He had two instances against this Buccaneers game the other night where he had 12 men on the field twice. In the AFC Championship, late substitutions, late decisions. Maybe that had to do with the fact that, you know, it happens when you're making substitutions. Sometimes it's the ref crew. You know, it's Cleet Blakeman and those guys. And there was in 2011 when the Packers wanted to run the no huddle offense. Rodgers told me in his locker. He said, you know what? We're having trouble with it because these refs don't get the ball down in time. So it's a hard. We get out of rhythm for us to line up. So the refs are. There's all a synchronicity to all this. But I did find this interesting. On the Friday before the NFC Championship game, a week from, you know, tomorrow, apparently Patton brought in the defense, at least the linebackers. Za'Darius was in there, Rashawn Gary, and he made them sit through and watch the clips of their 37-20 blowout loss in the NFC Championship last year in Santa Clara to the 49ers. And Za'Darius told us about that. And matter of fact, Ryan had a good question for him. Listen to Za'Darius here.
I think we just came out of a meeting, man, and our defensive meeting. We actually watched the national championship game from last year, NFC's championship game from last year. And, man, it's just not sitting right with us, and we know what we got to do as a team and as a defense.
Aaron, from the week going into week six and the game itself going against these guys, that made you guys better since then?
I would say in the run game, we didn't hold up as we were supposed to in the run game. And that's been going on for a while. And like you said, like we were just talking about, practice make perfect. We've been going in and out throughout the week, practicing on our fits and what we're supposed to align at. And even with the defensive coordinator, he'd have had us to where we're having more meetings after work now too. So, it's all a team effort, man. I would say, if anything, holding up in the run game, we're able to do better and accomplish and hopefully get Tom Brady in some situations to where we can get him off the spot and have some fun on third down.
That's Za'Darius Smith there. And Ryan, we only have about 30 seconds here before we need to get to break. But I just wonder if Mike Patton does leave, how much more difficult is it going to be for this defense to get acclimated to a new coordinator, whoever that might be?
The same challenges that are always there. Look, might be difficult for Packers fans to hear. Mike Pettine is a good defensive coordinator. He has a long track record of being a good defensive coordinator. Is he perfect? No. Will he have bad calls? Yes, he did at the end of the first half. Mike Pettine is a good defensive coordinator. You can do a whole lot worse as a defensive coordinator than having Mike Pettine in that seat.
He's Ryan Wood, our Green and Gold Insider, alongside Mike Clemens, also our Green and Gold Insider. It's the Huddle served up by Bud Light Seltzer. We will wrap things up coming up next.
Wisconsin-wide, the Big Show Radio Network.
I guess when I was holding the Hollis Trophy, it's like, oh my gosh, we're actually going to do it. And we can dream about looking across the street for 2 weeks.
To go on the road and win another road playoff game is just a great achievement. Now home Super Bowl for the first time in NFL history, I think, puts a lot of cool things in perspective. Anytime you're the first time doing something, it's usually a pretty good thing. So now we just got to go have a great 2 weeks, prepare for whoever it is, and be ready to go.
Yeah. Tom Brady, Bruce Arians, Brady back in the Super Bowl, ho-hum, this time with a different team. Jeez. I'm sorry, I'm jealous. I'm just jealous. Like, it must be nice. It's the Huddle. Final Huddle of the year, served up by Bud Light Seltzer. Unquestionably good. I'm Radio Joe alongside Mike Clemens and Ryan Wood. I'm not going to ask for predictions. It's too premature. We got a whole nother week until the Super Bowl. But, Mike, like, what's the biggest thing that intrigues you heading into this matchup between Brady and Mahomes?
Because I think Patrick Mahomes is the best athletic quarterback in the National Football League, but this year he's got Brady. He doesn't have Jimmy Garoppolo. So welcome to that. That's going to make it for a fun and entertaining game.
Ryan, what say you? Most intriguing thing heading into that matchup?
Well, it's a quarterback matchup, but just think of this. This is kind of like the Michael Jordan versus LeBron James matchup that we never got, right? Yeah. And if Tom Brady wins this game, it could be massive. One day, if Pat Mahomes becomes what we think he'll be and wins multiple Super Bowls and puts himself in that GOAT conversation, there will always be the yeah, but at 43 years old, Tom Brady beat him head to head.
You know what? I wonder, though, we only have a couple minutes here. Like, if Brady does win again at his age and being able to do it with another team, it's going to be very hard in our lifetimes to see another quarterback, even like someone like Mahomes, to be able to win as many titles and to do it in the way Brady's done it, especially with two different teams. Like, I just don't know if that's ever going to be surpassed, Ryan.
I'm with you. To me, Tom Brady is singular. I don't know why it's so hard for people to recognize Tom Brady's greatness, but not Michael Jordan. See, he is the Michael Jordan of football.
Yep.
He is the Michael Phelps, the Tiger Woods of football. Nobody who has ever played the game has come anywhere close to what Tom Brady has done. It's not even close.
And in the meantime, Mahomes has got to stay more in the pocket as that career goes on, man. He's had too many injuries as it is right now. You want to see him get that many chances. And as long as Andy Reid is calling his plays, you know, he may get there another three or four more times.
Well, we ran out of time here. We were going to try and get to some of the Packer players in free agency that we might be expecting to see, but we're out of time. But that's okay.
We got to hear from the coach, too. And we still haven't had that end-of-season presser. That may go on this weekend. Who knows?
Yeah, so have no fear. You will hear more from Mike Clemens and Ryan Wood on the Big Show Radio Network. For those of you listening in Milwaukee on 1250 AM The Fan, you'll hear from them as well. Guys, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun, and I'll make sure to get both of you in the same room again the next time we do this. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Ryan.
Hey, it was fun. Nice talking with you guys.
There they are. Mike Clemens, our Green and Gold Insider. Ryan Wood, Green and Gold Insider from the Green Bay Press Gazette, PackersNews.com. Thanks to Sam Schmitz on the other side for producing all year on the Huddle, served up by Bud Light Seltzer. Unquestionably good. I'm Radio Joe. Better days are coming, Packers fans. I don't know when, but they are coming. Have a good night.
You're listening to the Big Show Radio Network.